Lecture 3. Knowing me is a full-time job. Knowing me is a full-time job. Would you believe that? Ellen would agree to that very readily. Knowing me is a full-time job. Is knowing you a full-time job? Really? Think about it. Is knowing you a full-time job when you have so many nuances, you've only begun to count them? You have nuances of wonder, of magic, of mystery. Roger Perry writes that his daughter is in the Disney program at the Disneyland, and she is the bear. She wears the costume of the bear and goes around greeting the customers and greeting the children. Now, who would have ever thought that that's what she did? And she's had a rough time. Her mother and father were together, and then they went off on drugs, and the kids were being raised. And then the grandma dies, who had been taking care of them. And then the father goes to prison. And then the mother is back on drugs again because she's so unhappy. The father gets out of prison. He goes home, and the mother doesn't want him anymore, says, out of my world, out of my world. And so he goes back on drugs, and he's back in prison again. So then the son, he's in prison because of problems, too, that stealing and things like that. And so then the daughter, the good daughter, you know, she's coming along fine with all the hang-ups, problems that she's got, you know. She's adopted by a new family because her father's not available and her mother's not available. So a new family adopted her. Now, after they've been together for a number of years, the new family's going to get a divorce. So she's going to stay with the mother. But she's now a teenager, and she's a little more balanced. But, I mean, you think you got problems? You think you got problems in your life of things that you're getting hang-ups about? My goodness sakes. Just be thankful you're not that young lady, although she's coming along very well, very well. And we finally have Roger's address, and we can send him letters again. But again, his books are missing, and other things are missing, and what have you. So, but that's the games they play. Knowing me is a full-time job. You, me, you, us, I, we, you, thee, them. It's a full-time job, because I was having a discussion with several people today and yesterday about manipulation. And we were talking about having people in our world harmonious with what our beliefs are, with what our desires are, with what our goals are. Follow me? Okay. Now, how do you get other people in your world to be harmonious with your desires and your goals when theirs are sometimes a little different, and sometimes different in ways that are not appealing to you? So the question comes up, who are you? Can you manipulate other people? And the answer is no. You cannot manipulate other people. But what you can do is you can be God, and you can be the creator. And you can create those people having great experiences doing just the things that are wonderful for them and good for them and that you feel happy about. And you're not manipulating them at all. You're the master. You're creating those people in your world. Ellen has a son, and the son wasn't doing well in school. And so Ellen says he's a genius. You know how Ellen says he's a genius. She's always saying that. And so the kid caught on. He caught on that he was a genius. Now, Ellen would not allow him not to be a genius because she knew he was a genius. But he was goofing off. You know, we do goof off from time to time and fail to follow what is our best and our highest. And he goofed off. And then she said, no way, you're a genius. You are a genius. And lo and behold, he turned out a genius. Strange? Not at all. But is Ellen manipulating him? No. She is merely calling forth his highest and his best. Do we have the right to do that? we have not only the right, but the responsibility as beings. Each one of us express outwardly what we are within. So if we look around the world at war, that's who we are inside of ourselves. We're at war. If we look around at a world of peace, that's who we are. If we look around at a world of abundance and happiness and harmony and health and all that other good stuff, that's what we are. And my goodness, that would be certainly the type of thing that we'd want to look around at, right? Right, Gertrude?
Yes.
Yes, indeed. Right, Jerome? Yes. Mm-hmm. This is what we want to look at. Right, Christina?
Yes.
Yes. John?
Yes.
You, what's your name there? Sylvia?
Yes.
Yes. And Alan?
Yes.
Oh, my goodness. Inga? I didn't hear that.
Yes.
That's what I like it. You talk like Jerome.
Yes, yes, I'm little, just a little pipsqueak. I have no voice. I cannot talk loud.
But Jerome is learning how to be self-confident. Yes, I am Jerome. I am Jerome Suter. With a S-U-T-E-R. And I am Swiss and from Thailand, right? Right? Is your mom from Thailand? Are you Thailand and Swiss? You're sort of a mixed up kid, huh? You don't know whether you're Thai or Swiss. So you're going to be both of them, huh? Yeah. And I think you took the best of both. We should all be so fortunate to take the best of both like he does. And maybe we are. Did you all choose the best of both of whatever different backgrounds you come from? John, what do you come from? You come from English all the way?
Or is there? And a little New Zealand as well.
Well, I wouldn't say that. You come from English parents. Your mother or father weren't New Zealandish, were they, at the time you were born? Or had they already taken their citizenship papers?
My father was British and my mother was a New Zealander.
What?
My father is British and my mother is a New Zealander.
Your mother's a New Zealander?
Yes.
You mean she's a native?
Yes.
Wow. I didn't realize that you had a native in the family. Oh, then you are a bridge. That's beautiful. Sylvia, I suppose you're just an ordinary Swiss, huh?
Yes, ordinary Swiss.
An ordinary Swiss.
Yes.
And Ellen, what are you? An ordinary Deutsch?
Pure German.
Pure German. Oh, yay, yay. And Inge?
Also German.
Are you German? Are you pure German?
Pure.
Yes.
Pomerania.
And you, Stefan?
Swiss. Pure Swiss.
Huh?
Pure Swiss.
Pure Swiss. Christina?
Swiss and Austrian.
Swiss and Austrian. Oh, you're a mix too, huh? Good. The mixes sometimes come out pretty interesting too. And Gertrude?
Pure Swiss.
Pure Swiss. Irene?
A pure mixture.
German and
Swiss.
German and Swiss. Well, that's close. And Anita?
Not too, I think Swiss.
You think Swiss. You mean your parents never told you. Where's your daddy from? Where was he born?
In Zurich. Yeah,
it's
Swiss.
And your mommy?
Also.
Yeah, but that is Swiss. I think Zurich, yeah, that's Swiss. You're wonderful, I tell you. And we know all about you. And me, I'm German. My parents on both sides came from German. One from, they came from Pomerania, which is now Polish. So maybe I'm German a la Poland, or something like that. But we have so many nuances about ourselves, so many wonderful things about us that we haven't even begun to count. We haven't begun to recognize it. Now, is Gertrude a better person than Ellen because she's pure Swiss and Ellen's only pure German? What would you say? Would you say that Gertrude, and you're all keeping your mouth shut if you're Swiss, and if you're German, and you don't say something to you? But what would you say? What, Ingeborg? Inga?
Yeah.
You didn't say anything. You yawned. Okay.
No, I am present.
You what?
I am present. I'm here.
Good. Kind of worried. Okay. Now, what is it? What is it to be a purebred or a mongrel? Now, some are mongrels. What's a mongrel? That's two breeds or more. Yeah, a mixture. Okay. Now, what do they say about the mongrels? That they're the most loving. They're the most friendly. They're the most joyful beings that you could want. And what do you say about the purebreds? They got the nose up there. So you purebred people who are pure Swiss or pure German or pure whatever, you know, you're not as lovable as the mixture. Like, look at Christina there. Austrian and German, Swiss rather, and Irene. What all did you say? Well, German, I thought it was nothing more than German and Swiss. I mean, you know, nothing more than German and Swiss. Well, you know, at one time, that country was all one land before they started putting different names on it. And Austria and Germany and Switzerland and Poland, they were all called what? The Habsburgian Empire or something like that? I'm sorry? What? Okay, so at one time they came out of a greater area, you know, the German Republic or something like that. And then they split up because people began having different areas and different choices. They're like the crazy Swiss. The Swiss have a little country that's the size of a postage stamp, and in there they have fit a number of mini postage stamps. They call them cantons. And each canton, it's not bad enough that it's a canton, a separate little area, but they have to speak a separate dialect. And one dialect, even in one side of the city and the other side of the city, doesn't understand each other. And the dialects between the cantons don't understand each other. And so they all try to speak a Switzerdeutsch, which is a combination of German and dialect. And then they all basically understand German, but they don't really understand German because it's called Hochdeutsch and it's called High German and it's called something beyond them. Well, now, these are nuances of the people in Europe. In America, we don't have that problem. In America, everybody speaks English and everybody loves everybody else. And though we have states, and these states have postage stamp size with the counties in them. Everybody speaks the same thing. There may be a little bit of dialect, not dialect, though, there's another word for it, what they speak in Texas and slang or something here. But still, it's more of an English. It can be understood by everybody if you listen carefully. What's that, please? Accent. Thank you. Accent. Yes, it's an accent. And when you're in Texas, it's a drawl. And when you're in Louisiana and New Orleans and so forth, there it's definitely an accent. But it comes in from other things. Now, what do all these things mean? What do they mean to us? What they mean to us is that we are not as pure as we think we are. We are made up of many different attitudes, many different thoughts. We're made up of many different ways of thinking, cultural backgrounds, and so forth. And we think that we're able to just come out and make a blanket statement that we're God and get away with that and not have to be held accountable for our genes and our chromosomes. We're not have to be held accountable for our cultural differences and our cultural similarities. We feel we don't have to be held accountable for that. And that we're so special. We're so special. We lead the pack. And you know, it's true. It's true. We are not accountable for any other cultural background, any other genes, chromosomes, or anything like that. We are so unique. We are so pure. If you were to take Stefan and just rip the flesh right off of him, you'd find bones under there. You'd find a heart. You'd find a liver. You'd find lungs. You'd find all these things. You'd do the same thing to Christina. Just rip her flesh off. You find bones, heart, lungs, different things. You do it to any of us. Now, we're all the same. Now, why do we have this exterior that appears to be different? We have this exterior that appears to be different because we think it's fun. We think it's fun to be shorter, taller, fatter, thin. We think it's fun to have blue eyes, brown eyes, red eyes, green eyes, purple eyes, whatever, you know. We think that's fun. We think it's fun to have a brown skin or dark skin or red skin or white skin or whatever colors they come in, yellow skin. And we think that's just fun. But it has nothing to do with anything. You look at the palms of everybody's hands from every nation and they're all the same. You look at the bottoms of people's feet from all over the world, they're all the same. They're all white. If they're black, the bottoms of their feet are white. The bottoms of their palms of their hands are white. The color is a put-on thing. And you can take through several generations, if you wish, and have people turn from brown to white, or even a red-skinned person, like an Indian. All you do is just have this intermarriage of different cultural backgrounds, of different racial characteristics, and they change. They mutate. Now, how many times have you mutated? How many times have I mutated over the years? Just think of our own lifetime. We have been involved with people of cultures and races that we never dreamed about. And we have found that they're just like us. We were in Africa, and we were talking to our black friends down there, and they're brilliant. They're brilliant. As we talked to them, it was just amazing, because every book that I have read, every article in Discovery Magazine, Scientific American, in Popular Science, in Popular Mechanics, in National Geographic, and Smithsonian Institute, you name them, and I've read them all. They read them. They read them. They're brilliant people. They're into all these things. They're up on all these things. They know what's going on. They're on top of it. It's fantastic. Now, am I trying to say that I'm superior to them and I think that they're inferior because they know these things, that all of a sudden, hey, you know, they're as smart as I am? No. We have the tendency to think that people in other parts of the world, people with other cultures and other upbringing, have different interests, and their interests may not always be like ours, and that could be true. But you take any child from any culture and you involve him in, let's say, an American school and an advanced school where he's working on computers and he's working on this and that, he'll pick it up just like that. He'll be sharp as a tack. Never having known it before he came, he will just pick it right up. Now, why will they pick it up? Because they don't know they're not supposed to know it. They don't know it's supposed to be hard. They don't know that it's something that it takes adults a long time to learn. They have this innocence about them, this openness to reality, this openness to learning, and it's beautiful. Now, knowing me is a full-time job, because I too have that inner awareness, this inner ability. I love the Star Trek show in which the girl said, well, I've got to go in and take my German lesson or my history lesson. And she was asked, well, now, which one are you studying? All of them. All of them from the beginning to now. Wow. And so she went in there. She put this little thing on her head. She closed her eyes. And then she took it off because that's all it took. And she had the history of the universe in her mind, readily available in her personal filing cabinet. Now, that's kind of interesting. It's a fictional thing, but it's very interesting because that can be done. That can be done. But now let's look at it even from a broader picture. If we were to train ourselves to listen within and listen to our divinity within, if we were to train ourselves to be one with the allness that we are, with the universal mind, the universal intelligence, we could do the same thing, and we do it. There are times that we tap into our infinite awareness, and we are brilliant beyond imagination. We are fantastic, but we don't maintain it. We don't stay with it. We don't keep it up. And that's the tragedy. The tragedy is that we think we only know it for a time, and we want to know that we know it for always. And this is part of what we're learning here. We're learning to tap into our inner reality, to tap into our allness. And in tapping into the allness, say, I know that I know that I know, if you will, God in me is the answer. Or, I know that I know that I know, the divine in me is the answer. The spirit of all in me is the answer. The omniscience in me, the omnipotence and omnipresence in me is the answer. Or whatever you want to say, you know. But say that. Say that. And miracles happen. The miracle of you releasing the idea, you're not releasing it on purpose, releasing the idea that you don't know to assuming the reality that you do know. When you assume the reality that you do know, then you cannot still maintain the illusion that you didn't know and don't know. So this is what we're working on. These are things that we are putting into our consciousness and building into something rather wonderful and beautiful. But it is something that we're doing and something that is very special. Now, you have the privilege. You have the privilege of doing it right now. You have the privilege of being aware of who you are right now. And you have the privilege of not being aware of who you are right now. I go back to my sister May again. She's in her fog, and sometimes she's with us and sometimes she's not. When she's with us, she's just brilliant. When she's not, she's just out of it. By her choice. We all do it by our choice. We drop off into a coma by our choice. We drop off into wisdom and brilliance by ourselves. Why would anyone choose not to take wisdom and brilliance? Why would anyone choose? Well, the only reason is that they're feeling sorry for themselves. And when we feel sorry for ourselves, we close the door for every good thing that could ever happen to us. Every good thing. Not just the brilliance, not just particular things we're working on, but everything. Because do you like to go and be with people who are crying all the time? Do you like to go and be with people who have great problems all the time and do not want to make directions to solve those problems and bring about a positive solution? No, you don't want that. Gertrude was telling us of a friend she worked with for years who was continually giving her a hard time. And Gertrude hung in there for one reason. Not because she loved the lady, but the lady was lovable, but because Gertrude was a practitioner. And she was able to look past the illusions that were being given to her into the reality of the person. And that the person chose to take a few years to do it, that's okay. But we, each one of us here, are practitioners. And we are practitioners for ourselves first. Anita, who do we heal first? Ourselves. We heal ourselves first. First we say, all is in divine order. First we say, I am the pure white light of love. First we say, I see all in my world whole and perfect. Whatever you want to say. And then that's the cause you put in motion, and that's the results you get. Simple as that. There is so much in me to love. Was that song go, Ellen? Now I am only perfection. And I'm perfect in every way. Each time I look in the mirror, I see only God in me. To know me is to love me. I know I am God, God I am. Now I am only perfection, and I'm perfect in every way. Now I am only perfection, and I'm perfect in every way. Now I know I am God, God I am. Now I know I am God, God I am. Now, you can sing it to any melody you like, but each time I look in the mirror, I see only God in me. And to know me, oh my goodness, is to love me. Everybody loves me. Everybody thinks I'm wonderful. Because I think my creation are all wonderful. And everybody is my creation. And I look at them and I smile, and they smile back, and ooh, their teeth fall out. They're so happy, you know. It's like, you know, singing a high note, and the glass ding, and breaks the glass. We are wonderful. We are truly wonderfully made. Now, all of you have had the hang-up, and it's an unhappy hang-up. You have the hang-up that you think that the God outside of you created you. You know, you do. You think that God outside of you created you. In the beginning was God. In the beginning was the Word, right? And the Word was with God. And God spoke His Word and man became flesh. Okay. In the first chapter of Genesis, God created all the heavens and all the earth and all the good stuff and all the sea animals and land animals and everything else on the sun, and man and woman He created. But He didn't create them. He created man. And then man being the generic word, and then after He said, we create man, I created man and woman, created I them. Now at the same moment, now that's the first chapter of Genesis. That I always take as a very inspired book. Now in the second chapter, there's some moral lessons being taught. And the moral lessons are that man is superior to woman. It's a matriarchal type of life. And so man is created first, the human male is created first. And then the woman is created second from the rib of the male. Now, interesting, but the man has the same number of ribs that the woman has. Now, where did that rib come from? You know, whoever was writing this story must have been looking at a corpus delicti that had an extra rib. And they thought, you know, oh, that's where it came from. Or minus one rib. Minus one rib. Are you too tall with one leg or too short with the other leg? Or, you know, what is it? That's always a difficult situation to come by, isn't it? Think about it. Think about it. There is so much in me to love. There is the beauty of my spirit. There is the joy of mine. I was talking to Christina, and Christina says, it is such a delight to talk to her niece. The niece is such a charming girl, so wise and so brilliant and so beautiful. And to talk to Hengli's children is such a great experience. And she was saying how wonderful it was to talk with the boy who was just turning 12 or 13. And he's coming of that age where he's feeling his oats and he doesn't know how to put them in place. But he wants her to work with him. So she is saying to him, well, what's his name?
Michelle,
I see you whole and perfect. Michelle, you are a brilliant young man. Michelle, I am so proud of you. Michelle, everything you do makes me think that God sure is working through you. Michelle, you are fabulous. Michelle, I love you. Michelle, you're a credit to the family. Michelle, you're, and he's going to say, all right, already, cut off, you know. And then you go on the next day. And after a while, he gets used to it, you see. And then after a while, if you forget to say something to him, you say, didn't you forget to say something? Yeah. But there's that time. You get over the threshold of thinking that you don't deserve that, and thinking that you don't, those things shouldn't be said about you because they're false, to the realization that, hey, that does sort of fit me. It does sort of fit me. You have to break through that barrier. Well, that's the same with you for yourself. You break through the barrier of loving yourself. You break through the barrier of knowing all your various nuances about yourself. And it's wonderful to do that. But you can accomplish anything. You can open any door. You can walk through any avenue of learning or love that is there, because there's so much about you to love. It's really fantastic. Now, there is so much about you to understand. Think of that. There's so much about you to understand. Why did we create our body in just the way we did? Why did men create themselves as men and women create themselves as women? You say, I often wondered that. And some people, they don't like that, so they try to create themselves into the other nature by having an operation of one sort or another done, but it doesn't change anything. It doesn't change anything. You see, because deep within each of us is maleness or femaleness, and that is like if you have been raised by a society, and the society teaches that Jesus Christ is your Redeemer and He died for your sins, and if the society teaches that the males of the family are the greatest, and if society teaches these are things that men can do and women can't do, they're in you. Now, it doesn't have to stay, but it's in you. And if another society teaches you a matriarchal way where the woman is the power of the of the society, where it teaches you I don't mean to put these in the same breath, but where it teaches you to, it's okay to steal, it's okay to lie, it's okay to cheat, you know. If your society teaches you those things, then that's inside of you. That's something that you're living by, and you believe that it's correct, because it is what you've been taught. And then you come into another society, like ours, for instance, where we say, be yourself and have fun. Well, being yourself and have fun is stealing, is lying, is cheating, is doing dumb things like that, because that's what you've been taught. And so then how does a change ever come about? How does a change ever come about in us if we have our mores, the way we have been trained and taught by our family, society, and the world? How can we ever put that into a different perspective? Well, we put it in a different perspective by understanding ourselves. You have a friend, and that friend is living by societal rules that are not harmonious with the society you're living in right now. You have a friend who likes to drive a car fast and break the speed limit all the time. You have a friend who treats women poorly. You have a friend who steals and who does other silly things, okay? So, how do you help that friend to balance themselves? And of course, the friend's name is Yourself, you know, yourself. How do you train that person to come in harmony with society? Well, in the Old Testament, they used all the threats and cajoles of the Bible to control people. And they said that God will send down lightning and thunder if you don't have one God, just one God, and believe in Him alone. Well, there are people in this world who believe in another God than the one God. And lightning and thunder hasn't destroyed them. So how can you move discipline into this picture? Well, you do it simply by understanding, by saying, this is a principle. And for instance, Stefan lives in another culture, or came out of another culture which is not harmonious with ours, And so Christina says to Stefan, who is her husband, she says, Stefan, you are a wonderful man. Stefan, you always live by the rules of the society you live in. Stefan, you are a master under all circumstances. Stefan, you are a great man. Now, why is she giving him all this whitewash? She is planting seeds. She is planting seeds in him to say all of the virtuous things that your society calls for, he does. Now, he might say, do it all you want. It doesn't mean anything to me. I'm happy doing what I want. I'm happy being the klutz that I am, and I'm happy doing all these things. Okay. But is he? A few minutes later, things change. A few days, a few years later, things change. How do they change? They change with him being harmonious with the rules of society in which he lives. Because you put the cause in motion. And I must say this, he is your creation. And you created him having these false gods, so to speak. You had created him having these different ways of living, and now you're creating him having the ways of living that you're living in the society you're living. And so the way you create him that way is quietly to yourself, not to him. I see you living harmoniously with our society here. Make sense? It works. And it works very quick. I don't always like to repeat the story of J.B. and Silva Lachman, but they weren't getting married. And they were living together, and they weren't getting married because his wife wouldn't give him a divorce. And then he said, what am I going to do, Herb? And I said, well, tell your wife in your consciousness that she is surrounded by handsome, beautiful, wealthy men, and that they all want to marry her, and she wants to get free of you so she can make a choice. I will not do that. I'll not do anything that'll make her life happy. I won't do that. I said, hey, you do it because it's going to free you to have your own life. He did, and within a week, his lawyer called and said, she signed the papers. You can come in anytime you want. Now, he had been doing this for years, 16 years. Can you imagine that? And he and Silva Bachman were together maybe about 7 or 8 years, but they love each other. Beautiful couple, you know, just uniquely themselves. And did he have a right to have his wife be happy and get off his back? No. Did she have a right to marry this man that she loved? No. There's no rights. There's choice. And the choice meant they put the cause in motion sincerely, not with maliciousness toward the wife, but sincerely, seeing themselves walking their perfect path. It's a wonderful thing. Okay. That is so much. There is so much in me to understand. What is there in you to understand? In you to understand, is there love, peace, harmony, joy, happiness, abundance, goodness? What's in you to understand? What is in you to understand? Is it in you to understand that you are the master of your world? Is it in you to understand that you are a great person? Well, I think so. I think so. I am the allness, yet I am the finite. Now, this is a term we have all wrestled with a great deal. I am the allness and I am the finite. Now, we say about the allness, if you are the allness, you are the finiteness, but you don't know it. If, as the allness, you know the finiteness, you are no longer the allness, but you are that which you know as the finiteness. If you are finite, and you know of the allness, you have a glimpse that that exists. But the moment you turn yourself to knowing the allness absolutely, completely, the finiteness ceases to be. It ceases to have any power. It ceases to have any existence at all. Right? You're able to explain that perfectly.
Yes, sir.
You're a master. Is she good?
Yeah. That one, I might have a little more time, or you say it again.
All right. Think of it. I am the allness, yet I am the finite. If we say we are the allness, then we cannot be the finiteness, because then we would be whatever we say we are or whatever we think we are. And if we are the finite, or that is, if we're the allness and we say we're the finite, then we no longer are the allness because our concentration is on the finite. We are whatever we think about. And that's a perfect illustration of it. We are whatever we think about. If we think about finiteness, we're finite. If we think about allness, we're all. But you cannot think about the two at the same time. And so if Ellen says, I am rich, she cannot think of the bills. She cannot think of being poor. If Ellen says, I am full, and then she goes by a restaurant that has her favorite menu in the wall, in the window, and she smells it. Oh, I got to have it. But you just ate a full meal. I got to have that. You know, interesting, isn't it? They always say, if you're going to go shopping, don't go shopping on an empty stomach. You'll buy out the store. But if you go on a full stomach, you're liable to buy even more because you can carry more. You're ready. Of course, that's the way I am. That's what my name is Mr. Abundance, Mr. Opulence. So I am the allness, yet I am the finite. Do we want to concentrate on being the finite? Do we want to concentrate on being limited? Do we want to concentrate on all of those things which keep us from being the allness that we are? Hey, we can. We can. Think of this here. The king. He's a good king. But his neighbor is kind of a weak ruler. And he says, now is the time to go in and take it over. So he goes in and takes over the weak ruler. And of course, what does a weak ruler have? A weak army. A weak administrative group. Everything is weak in there. The crops are weak. Everything is weak. So he takes over this weak country, which he has to feed and house and clothe because he's taken it over and they've never had anything before because they had a weak leader. Okay, then he takes over another country and takes over another country, takes over all these countries. And what happens? What happens? He becomes weaker and weaker and weaker because who the country is maybe still in the central core, but in the outlying areas is the feelings of the people out there, the feelings of the people for saying that they are Polish, they are Austrian, they are whatever, you know, and they have their own nationality, they have their own national way, and so the country that wants to take them over sends people into these countries to re-educate them in the country that is the aggressor's attitude. And what happens? What happens is you water down your own convictions, because people will keep their own conviction to a great degree. But if you train them in your convictions, it'll be a watered-down thing. You see, the difficulty about countries that want to go and usurp other countries, take them under their control, is that the countries that do that forget they only have so many noble people in their country. And if they send all the noble people out of their country to train the people in these other countries to have the fatherland experience and to believe in the one culture, the one nation, someone has to do the teaching. So that means you take the brain children out of the parent country to do that. But in the process, these brain children become watered down. They fall in love with the local Fräuleins, you know. They fall in love with the local techniques of artistry, of stitchery, of painting, of excuse me, whatever they fall in love with. But they fall in love with the stuff. And the reason they fall in love with it was because in their own culture, in their own country, they were not experienced to that. They had not known it. And that's a very difficult thing. It's like you go to the Polynesian Islands and you train them into being Westerners or to being Europeans. And when you train them into being Europeans, they have no background at all. But they will take on the things that are most interesting to them, which is agricultural instruments and war. Guns and other types of things they'll take on. These are the things that the missionaries bring to these other nations. And that's why the other nations haven't changed much. They just become better warriors, but nothing else. Now, how can that change by you and me? We, Ellen and I, were in Nigeria and Ghana, and we taught them to sing, "I love Nigeria, land that I love. I stand beside her and guide her through the night with the light from above. From the mountains to the valleys to the ocean white with foam, I bless Nigeria, my home sweet home. I bless Nigeria, my home sweet home." We had them singing this. And when they got done, they had a nobility about their spirit that was so beautiful, because they said, "We will no longer allow our government to treat us as second-class citizens. Our government is paving our roads, building our hospitals, building our schools. Our government is doing da-da-da-da-da-da." Just going on into all wonderful venues of work. Now, what's going to happen in Nigeria? What's going to happen in Ghana? They're going to have it. Because they are going at it in the positive way. Perhaps small, although we got on television, perhaps small, but I believe great wonders are going to happen. And as they happen, will we get credit for it? No. Who cares? Who cares who gets the credit? If another country can be raised in their world standards and their business standards and their whatever standards they have, that's great, right? That's great. That's what it's all about. But if not, then we have a problem. And the problem that we have is that these people will be standing there with their hands out. Instead, we're teaching the people to stand there with their hand over their heart and listening to the divine within them and letting the divine within them reveal to them all the magic that they are. We saw it happen with just one young man, Emmanuel. We worked with him in a very subtle and yet not so subtle way that was tough for him. But he came through pretty well. He came through recognizing that he's okay, that he's a worthwhile person, that he's a good person. He knew it pretty much already, but we helped to reinforce it. You see, when you begin to look at yourself that you're the allness, and yet you're the finiteness, when you begin to look at yourself like that, what happens to you? What happens to you is that you open the door of your inner self to the allness that you are. It's a wonderful thing. Are you ready to experience all that it has to offer you? I am the allness, yet I am the finite. Are you ready to experience the allness? Are you ready to experience everything that God is, everything that could ever be? Are you ready to experience that? And the answer is no. And why do I say the answer is no? Because if you were ready to experience it, you'd experience it. Now, to experience it means you keep your consciousness one-pointed on the allness. In the process, everything you do as a human being will be exacerbated into a beautiful expression of wholeness and purity and goodness. When you do it, you will find that every door opens up for you. You will find that everybody wants to do things for you, wants to give you good things and be nice to you. Everybody. But if you are not experiencing that, then you are not doing that. It's just that simple. If you're not experiencing the allness, you're not putting that cause into motion. No. Do you want to experience the allness? Do you want to experience this? Then put the cause in motion. As a man thinketh in his heart, so is he. Let me be one-pointed, thinking only on my oneness, my allness, my absolute quality. It's such a glorious and such a beautiful thing. And it's something that each of us have the right to experience right now. So, go forth and multiply. And enjoy yourself as much as I enjoy you. I love you.